Yeah.
Real estate agents Jody and Jean Winchester are walking me through a stately yellow stucco colonial revival mansion on a tranquil street in Lexington. There's a perfectly manicured acre of land surrounding the estate. Heck, there's even a carriage house.
This was the original master bedroom where Ponzi slept or maybe didn't sleep.
He's having his nightmares in here.
this is where Charles Ponzi woke up in the middle of the night in sheer terror.
Oh yeah, and it belonged to Charles Ponzi. Yes, that Ponzi. You know, of the scheme.
He's a wonderfully charismatic character. He's an incredible salesman, the greatest salesman, maybe one of them, who ever lived.
That's Boston University professor Mitchell Zuckoff, author of Ponzi Scheme, the true story of a financial legend.
And he's a great American story in a way, because he's an immigrant.
Ponzi's rise and fall was lightning quick. It all started in December of 1919, when he hatched an investment plan that involved the buying and selling of foreign postage stamps. He figured and promised that he could double his investors' money in just 90 days.
But, of course, that proved to be impossible, so it just became a robbing Peter to pay Paul scheme, where early investors were paid with money from later investors.
And for a while, it worked. Spectacularly. By the middle of 1920, there were lines of eager investors outside of Ponzi's office on School Street in downtown Boston.
Suddenly, this guy, this nobody had ever heard of, this Italian immigrant who had come to Boston in 1917 after traveling around the country, is the most popular guy in Boston. But none of the papers had taken note of this.
That all changed on July 24th, 1920, when the Boston Post, the city's biggest newspaper at the time, turned their attention to the charismatic huckster and his precipitous rise.
It's just a straightforward news story. It doesn't accuse him of being a swindler. It doesn't accuse him of anything. And they run it on the front page. And this becomes the best day in Ponzi's life.
On the heels of the story, the crowds outside of Ponzi's office swelled. Money came pouring in. He was the toast of the town. The kind of guy who lived in a palatial estate.
It's incredible, and it's real.
These fixtures on the ceiling are Japanese, like, lustreware.
This is the butler's pantry.
Cool.
Yeah.
There's an acanthus corbel that anchors that corner going up the stairway.
Very a la Downton Abbey.
I've never seen anything quite like this.
But the Post's editor smelled something fishy, and they stayed with the story. Their shoe leather reporters hit the streets, and it led to day after day of front page pieces investigating Ponzi and his activities.
When the Post gets on Ponzi, it's central to everything that happens. Then the politicians, the bank commissioners, the attorney general of Massachusetts, the district attorney of the county, all realize, oh my God, we have to figure out what's happening here.
What was happening was, of course, criminal. On August 11th, the Post revealed that Ponzi had been convicted of forgery at a scandal-ridden bank in Montreal the decade prior. The next day, Ponzi surrendered to federal authorities.
He gets prosecuted by the state and by the federal government. He gets sent to prison here in Massachusetts, ultimately deported, and he dies in the late 1940s, impoverished, in Brazil.
His investors received less than 30 cents on each of their dollars. The losses totaled $20 million, which today would be about $225 million. But Zuckoff insists that despite the evils that he perpetrated, Ponzi was not a truly evil guy. He says that, initially, Ponzi never set out to swindle anyone. He simply drank his own Kool-Aid.
He didn't know how to stop. And he was so desperate to succeed that he let the devils of his nature overtake the angels.
Oh, and Ponzi's estate in Lexington?
The quality's amazing.
It's for sale. But it might take a Ponzi scheme to gather the $3.3 million it will cost for it to be yours. Charles Ponzi, America's most famous swindler, whose scheme came crashing down thanks to the work of the gang at the Boston Post 94 years ago this week. From the Curiosity Desk, I'm Edgar B. Herwick III, WGBH, Boston Public Radio.
But then it's hard to sleep. You make a killing, then it don't last long.
money that he